All right, welcome back to the deep dive.
Oh,
Today, we're going way back to 1937
wow. Okay.
to a Supreme Court case that honestly, you probably haven't heard of. It's called Ex parte Levitt, and it really gets to the core of something we talk about a lot on this show,
Yeah.
which is basically like who even gets to show up in court.
Right.
You know, who can hold the government accountable
Yeah.
through the courts? And it all boils down to this idea of standing.
Absolutely standing.
Yeah.
Ex parte Levitt really sets the stage for understanding
Yeah.
who has the right to walk into a courtroom and say, hey, what the government's doing is wrong.
It's like the bouncer at the courthouse door, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And the case itself, it's a fascinating story. We're talking about whether
Yeah.
any citizen could just challenge a Supreme Court justice's appointment just because they think it's unconstitutional.
It's like something ripped from the headlines today.
Right. It feels so
Yeah.
modern, but this was playing out almost a century ago.
Wow. Okay. So set the scene for us. 1937, what's going on?
So you have President Roosevelt. He appoints Hugo Black, who was a sitting U.S. senator at the time, to the Supreme Court. And this immediately causes a huge stir.
I bet. I mean, a senator going straight to the Supreme Court, that's got to raise some eyebrows.
Well, absolutely. And it drew in this guy, Albert Levitt. He was a U.S. citizen, a
Yeah.
member of the Supreme Court bar.
Okay.
And he basically goes straight to the court, files a petition to block Black's appointment.
Whoa, bold move. What was his argument, though? What was the legal basis for this challenge?
He said it violated the Constitution, specifically the ineligibility clause.
Okay, remind us, what's the ineligibility clause all about?
It's there to prevent conflicts of interest, to keep members of Congress from taking other jobs in government they
Right.
might have influenced while they were in Congress.
Yeah,
It's
okay.
Article 1, Section 6, Clause 2, for those who want to look it up. But the basic idea is if you're
Yeah.
in Congress, you can't take a civil office that was created or got a pay raise while you were serving. So Levitt's digging around and he finds out that while
Yeah.
Black was a senator, Congress had actually increased the retirement benefits for Supreme Court justices.
Ah, so Levitt's thinking, gotcha. Black voted for a better retirement package. Now he can't benefit from it.
Exactly. He's saying Black's ineligible.
That's a pretty clever legal argument, right?
It seems pretty solid on the surface, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Levitt wasn't saying that he himself had been personally harmed
Interesting.
by Black's appointment.
Right. Like he wasn't also vying for the Supreme Court seat or anything.
Exactly. He was acting as a concerned citizen,
Yeah.
a member of the bar,
Right.
but not someone directly impacted by Black being on the court.
So what was his logic then? Was he saying any citizen can just step in and
Yeah.
make sure the Constitution's being followed?
That's the million-dollar question, and it
Yeah.
gets to the heart of this idea of standing.
Okay, standing, right.
Okay.
It comes up a lot in law, but let's break it down for those listening who might not be law students.
Sure. Standing basically means, do you have the right to bring this case to court? Can you even be here?
It's not just about whether the law was broken. It's about who gets to argue about it.
Exactly. It comes from Article 3 of the Constitution.
Yeah.
This case or controversy requirement, the courts can only decide real disputes, not hypothetical ones.
So it's not enough to just think the government did something wrong. You have to actually be affected by it.
Right. And the court has these specific tests to see who has standing.
Okay.
And a big part of it is this difference between a generalized grievance and a particularized injury.
Okay, I'm guessing Levitt's concern about Black's appointment, that would be a generalized
You
grievance.
got it. It's a complaint that a lot of people might share,
Right.
maybe even everyone, but it's about how the government operates in general.
Like, if I think Congress passed a dumb law, that's a generalized grievance.
Exactly. Or if you think the president made a bad appointment,
Right.
it affects everyone, but not anyone specifically.
Okay, so what about a particularized injury then? What makes it different?
A particularized injury is something that directly harms you, the individual. It's concrete, it's tangible, like if you were discriminated against when you tried to rent an apartment.
Okay, that's a much more specific situation.
Right, it's a direct harm to you.
So in Levitt's case, the court had to decide if his worry about the Constitution was enough,
Yeah.
or if he needed to show that Black's appointment specifically hurt him in some way.
Exactly. And they looked back at their own past decisions. There was this case, Fairchild v. Hughes, back in 1922,
Okay.
where a citizen tried to challenge the 19th Amendment
Wow.
just because they didn't like it. But the court said, nope, you haven't shown how it harms you personally.
So liking or not liking a law, that's not enough for standing.
Nope. And then there's Massachusetts v. Mellon from 1923.
Right, I remember that one from law school.
In that case, The court said just being a taxpayer doesn't automatically mean you can sue over government spending.
Right. You have to show it affects your taxes specifically, not just in general.
That's the key. It can't just be a complaint everyone has.
So the court's drawing a line in the sand. They're saying we need real disputes.
Right.
Between people who have skin in the game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Imagine if anyone could sue over anything they thought was wrong with the government.
Oh, man.
The courts would be totally swamped.
Yeah.
It'd be chaos.
So how did they actually rule in Ex parte Leavitt? Did they even look at the ineligibility clause?
Well, they issued what's called a per curiam opinion, which means it was unsigned from the whole court.
Okay.
And it's very short and to the point. They said that for someone to challenge the government in court, they have to show that they've been harmed or are about to be harmed by the government's actions.
And Leavitt couldn't show that, right?
No. The court specifically said, and I'm quoting here, the motion papers disclose no interest upon the part of the petitioner other than that of a citizen and a member of the bar of this court. That is insufficient.
So they didn't even get into whether Black was actually ineligible. They just said Leavitt couldn't even ask the question.
Exactly. It was dismissed on procedural grounds. He lacked standing.
So what's the lasting impact of this case? Why are we still talking about it almost 100 years later?
Well, for one thing, it really solidified this idea of standing.
Yeah.
It made it clear that having a general grievance isn't enough.
Right.
You need a concrete, particularized injury to sue in federal court.
It's like a filter, keeping the courts focused on real disputes.
Exactly. It stops the courts from getting bogged down in hypothetical arguments or political grandstanding.
And it protects the separation of powers.
Yeah.
Right. Keeps the courts out of purely political fights.
Absolutely. The courts are there to resolve legal disputes, not to settle political disagreements.
Are there any more recent cases where we see this standing principle at work?
Oh, tons. Standing comes up all the time, like in Clapper v. Amnesty International back in 2013.
Okay.
Some human rights groups tried to challenge government surveillance.
Right. That was a big case.
But the court said their fear of future surveillance wasn't concrete enough. They hadn't been actually harmed yet.
So even in the age of mass surveillance, standing still matters.
Absolutely. And just a few years ago in TransUnion LLC v. Ramirez, the court really doubled down on the need for a concrete harm.
Even when someone's rights have been violated, they still need to show how they were specifically harmed.
Exactly. So that core idea from Leavitt, direct injury, not just a grievance.
Right.
It's still shaping who can and can't sue in federal court.
So to bring it all home, Leavitt teaches us that just thinking that the government messed up isn't enough.
Yeah.
You have to show how you personally were harmed.
That's the key. It might seem simple, but it has huge implications for how our legal system works.
Huge implications for who has access to justice.
Exactly.
It's a really fascinating case.
It really is. And it makes you think, what if things were different?
Yeah.
What if anyone could sue the government over anything?
That's a good question to ponder. Ex parte Leavitt, it drew a line in the sand. And understanding that line is crucial for understanding the law.
Couldn't agree more.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's deep dive into Ex parte Leavitt.
It was a good one.
It was a good one. For all you law students out there, keep this case in mind. It might not be the most famous one,
yeah,
but it's definitely one of the most important.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening.
See ya.